Well, hello and welcome to Equestrian Legacy Radio. This is a radio program that promotes the Tennessee Walking Horse in all of its various disciplines, and we're excited to have everyone listening today. Regardless of your breed, I think our programming will be something that is interesting to anyone, whether you have a walking horse or some other breed. So welcome again, and we have some exciting guests on here, some people that are very knowledgeable in the horse industry, and the name of the show today is titled Blessed Are the Broodmares, and so we're going to be talking about breeding and foal care and some other topics of interest. But our first guest today is a very special lady, and that is Miss Ola Archer. And Ola and several other folks have developed a Facebook page called the Tennessee Walking Horse Friends Helping Friends page. I think if you want to look for it on Facebook, it's TWH Friends Helping Friends. And Ola, welcome to the program this morning.
Thank you so much for having me.
Ola, tell us a little bit about the purpose for the page being started. And I know you have a special family that you're doing some things for right now, so share with us a little bit about that.
This group, kind of the Friends Helping Friends, we had done a silent auction last summer to help a special needs stable hand, and folks had a lot of fun, and we raised some monies, and I guess just in the past couple of months, these same friends have helped me, either emotionally or financially. So some of us were talking, and it's Tammy Valmus and Susan Shelton, and there's a need out there. This is one big family, the Walking Horse family. So we chose to start a Facebook page, Tennessee Walking Horse, TWH, Friends Helping Friends, with the first recipient of some monies raised, the Connie Bobo family. Miss Bobo's had some medical challenges, and we just would like to help her with those expenses.
Well, that's great. I know that people that are in the walking horse industry, particularly throughout the Southeast, know Connie and Bill Bobo. And Connie has been challenged with a couple of illnesses. One is CVID, and there's a proper name for that I will not attempt to pronounce. And the other is myasthenia gravis. Both of these are very rare and very debilitating diseases, and so I know that they've been facing challenges for a couple of years with that. Tell us what you're doing for Connie.
And with this group that has started this page, we were trying to figure out how to get this thing started. I reached out to Mr. Randall Baskin and pitched him the idea of what we wanted to do and where we were headed. And Mr. and Ms. Baskin so graciously donated a stud fee to their 2002 World Grand Champion out on parole to be the first item in the silent auction to help raise some monies for Bill and Connie Bobo.
Well, that is awesome, and so kind of the Baskins to make that available. So how can they bid on this stud fee for out on parole, and when does the bidding start?
Okay, you can go to the Facebook page. The silent auction online will start Thursday, May the 23rd at 8 a.m. and run until Sunday, May the 26th at 6 p.m. And what we will do is we will start just a post on that page, and you can just go there and enter your bid, and the next person may raise your bid, and so on and so forth. And the final bid gets a stud fee.
Well, that's fantastic. Now, I know some of our listeners may not be on Facebook, so is there a way that they would be able to bid if they chose to?
Yes, I will give my name and number as well as the other two ladies that are helping. We can be reached by cell phone and or text, and I have no problem in supplying my email address.
Okay.
So do you want that now, or do you want to post that later?
Well, if it's okay, Ola, I'll go ahead and post that to my to the website, and that's equestrianlegacy.net, and we'll post details on the auction and how they can contribute. And also, if people are on Facebook, they can go to 2WH, Friends Helping Friends, and be able to bid there as well. So I think it's
great.
Okay,
go ahead.
No, that's all right. I was just going to say I think it's great that you folks care enough to kind of pay it back and try to help the Bobo family, but also you plan on doing the same thing for other people that may be in need in the walking horse world. Is that correct?
That is correct, Mr. Gary. We're going to start with Miss Connie, and we already have lots of other donations of other items and for silent auctions. And I know there are just a lot of people in this industry that are struggling and need a little help. And like I said, they've helped me, the Tennessee Walking Horse people, and I just want to help pay it forward to others. And like Miss Connie told me, you know, they have four generations of Bobos that have been involved in this industry. And that's just wonderful.
Well, they're a great family, and I know that I follow Connie's postings on Facebook, and she's one of the most positive, inspirational people that I know. And so I appreciate very much what you're doing and what the other folks are doing to try to help the Bobo family out during this period of financial need, and what you'll continue to do to help other folks. So, Ola, be sure and get that information to me, and we'll post that on the website today so that people
okay.
will have your contact information. And then again, they can go to Facebook at TWH, Friends Helping Friends. And Ola, thanks so much for taking the time to be with us this morning and for sharing that information. God bless you.
And you too, Mr. Gary. And if I could throw in one more thing, if you're not able to bid on the stud fee or other things, there has also been an account set up, was set up last year for Miss Connie for financial donations, and we've already got that going also. And I will supply you with that information, Mr. Gary.
Well, that's great, and I think you also have that posted on the Facebook page as well.
All the information is there, yes, sir.
Well, great, and thank you so much, and bless you guys for what you're doing to help people in the industry.
Thank you.
Thanks,
friends
Ola.
Friends helping friends.
Friends helping friends. That's what it's all about.
Yes,
all right,
sir,
thanks. Thanks very much. All right, well, listen, be sure and check out the Facebook page, and if you're able to do anything to help in that fundraising effort, then that's appreciated. And again, we'll have information posted later today on equestrianlegacy.net, our website, so that you'll be able to reach out. And whatever you can do in any small way is greatly appreciated. Well, we have a great program, as I said earlier today, and we have two very special guests. We have Mr. Mike Hicks, who's with us. Mike is a vice president with the Tennessee Walking Horse Breeders and Exhibitors Association, and I think he's the vice president of the Breeders Division, and he also is the owner and manager of New Horizon Stables, which is one of the premier breeding facilities in Middle Tennessee. So, Mike, welcome to the show today.
Thank you, Gary. I'm glad to be here.
And we're also really grateful to have Dr. John Bennett with Equine Services, LLC. And Dr. Bennett is one of the great equine specialists and veterinarians in the mid-state area and in the state. And I've had experience with Dr. Bennett in the past with some pretty serious situations with horses, and he's pulled them through and done things that we really didn't think could happen for them. So, Dr. Bennett, thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Mr. Holt, very much.
You know, this is a show that goes global, and it reaches people worldwide. So, Mike, tell us a little bit about how you got started in the walking horse business, and what you're doing with New Horizons Staples.
Okay, Gary, sure will. Like a lot of people in the horse industry, it started from childhood. I grew up with a pony that I spent a lot of time with, and then as I got a little older, I sold the pony and bought a motorcycle and left horses behind for a little bit, but they were always in my heart. And actually, other than a vehicle, the first major thing I bought as an adult with my own money was a Tennessee walking horse. And I wasn't particularly looking for a Tennessee walking horse. It just by chance, that's what I ended up with. It was my first time riding a walking horse, and I enjoyed it so much that I ended up buying that mare. And within a year, I had accumulated about half a dozen. The following year, I raised my first foal, and that was in 1987. And since that time, I've raised numerous foals every year. I've spent a lot of time in the show ring, in all divisions, halter, pleasure, performance. But the thing that really, really caught me and I really got enamored by was the breeding side. I just really enjoyed watching the mares foal and watching the foals progress. And that was the part that truly stole my heart. And so I ended up becoming more and more involved with that, and decided that was what I wanted to spend my career trying to do. And so I have been fortunate enough to work alongside a lot of great people who taught me numerous things, more than I can even begin to count. The people and the experiences I've had on growing up through this thing, and it has been a great ride, I'll have to say. And then from there, you know, I'd spent a number of years in the industry, but never been involved on any of the boards or anything like that. And 3 years ago, I just felt a little nudge that maybe I should do that. So I ran for the Board of Directors of the Breeders Association, TWHBEA, and was elected for the state of Tennessee to the board, and decided to go ahead and run for a spot on the executive committee as well. If I was going to get in, I might as well get in and see what I could do to try to make a difference for this breed that has meant so much to me. And so I've been on the board and the executive committee. It's been my third year, and this year I am the vice president of the Breeders Division, and I have thoroughly enjoyed the committee members I've been able to work with, and the staff of the association, and the other members of the executive committee, and I feel like we've got some common goals and a lot of work ahead of us, but slowly making a lot of progress as well. So a few years ago, 3.5 years ago, I made the swap from working for other people at other farms to opening my own barn. And my wife, Christy, and I do that together. Thank goodness she does it with me, because I spend so much time there. I don't know that it'd be real good for a marriage to not have her alongside me. But we have been blessed to have a lot of good customers support us. Several really nice stallions to stand and promote, and people have entrusted us with their offspring to market, And so it has been a great ride, and Dr. Bennett has been a huge part of this whole process too. We've worked together since 2000 in numerous ways, some of them on the same payroll and some just in connection as a partnership on trying to get a good job done. So, but that's my little story in a nutshell.
Well, thanks for sharing that, and you have some outstanding stallions at New Horizon now, and I encourage people to go by and visit with you and take a look at those stallions. One of my favorite is Jens Armed and Dangerous, and I think isn't he hitting his 25th year this year?
He is actually 24 years old by the ring. Because as those who are associated with Walk North industry know, we have a fall breeding season, which is actually a holdover season. So he was born in 1988, but he was born in the fall of 88. So that puts him in the same age range as the foals of the 89 season in the spring year.
Gotcha.
So, but he has done a phenomenal job as a sire through the years, been designated sire of the year several times, and produced world champions in every aspect of a breed, and just in the show horse side, and he's done a great job, still doing a good job, and he's been very special to me. I've been associated with him since 1997. So I've spent a lot of my time with that bull.
Well, that's great. Dr. Bennett, I know that I believe you're a Kentucky boy, aren't you?
Yes, sir. That's correct. Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
And you came down to and started your career when here in Middle Tennessee?
We moved in the fall of 99 to Murfreesboro, what was Lytle Creek at that time.
Right. I remember that, and you opened your practice now, Equine Services LLC. When?
In January of 2003, we opened up. So we've been kind of going back into private practice since 2003. I graduated from Auburn University Vet School in 1980, and I was in private practice in Kentucky and had a couple of clinics and. Some veterinarians working for me, and had an opportunity to sell them and move to Middle Tennessee, and my family and I, and we did. We've been here since 99, and it's just been a great move. Two of my three children have actually shown walking horses, shown at the celebration, and it's just a great breed to be around. My grandfather had saddlebreds, and I grew up around them, and at that time, you go to the county shows and county fairs and saddlebreds and walking horse shows were together, and it was just a great time for everybody. So that's kind of my background.
Well, Kentucky's loss was Tennessee's gain, so we're sure glad to have you. We're sure glad to have you down here. Let me remind folks that you'll be able to call in and ask questions of Dr. Bennett and Mike. The phone number that you could call is 213-943-3396, 213-943-3396. We want to talk about breeding, and of course, we've had a lot of babies that have been born and already this year, and folks are looking to rebreed. Dr. Bennett, what's the best age to start breeding a mare?
Yeah, we get that question a lot, and in the walking horse breed, if you could hold off till they were 3 years old, I think you just do a lot better job. We get some mares that fillies that are in at 2 years, and sometimes that kind of goes against mother nature. It's better in my mind if we could wait till they're 3 years old. They just cycle better, they just produce better, they're more mature, and then once we get them pregnant, they just do a better job of carrying it and getting you a stronger, healthier baby because they're stronger and healthier themselves.
Right. Well, they're still babies at two, so it makes a lot of sense. And how long are these mares usually productive?
We got mares in the late 20s that are still producing babies. One thing to note is mares that are 20 years old are breeding on follicles and eggs that are 20 years old. So a mare's born with all the follicles and eggs she's going to have, and as she ages, they age too. So we get into the late teenage and early 20 years. The fertility sometimes decreases, but we still, with the walking horse breed, this breed is just phenomenal in their stamina sometimes. But just like our 24 years old, still gets them pregnant as good as anybody out there, and the brood mares seem to be the same way.
Yeah, I recall having a mare that was a three-quarter sister to Ebony Masterpiece, and we got her when she was 9, and I think she had her last foal at 24. And
yeah,
and she almost never missed a year. And so if you take care of them right and everything goes well, they can breed on up into their 20s without any problem. Mike, let me ask you a question. As a breeder, how much does the mare play in the quality of a foal? Some people think it's all the stallion and maybe make a mistake of breeding a little lesser mare to the stallion and hope that he does everything for her. But what part do you think the mare plays in the colt?
Well, in my opinion, I think the mare is definitely way more than 50%. The stallion is important. You cannot breed to a stallion that doesn't have the disposition you're looking for, the trainability, the talent, whatever the case may be, and expect to come out with a offspring that is going to have those qualities. However, that being said, the same is true with the dam or even more. You've got the genetics of both being blended to create that foal. So that would give you the 50% mark. But then you also have the dam is going to be imprinting that foal the time that the foal is on her side. So as far as a lot of your disposition issues and those type of things, that is definitely going to be a factor for the first 5 to 6 months of that foal's life. They're going to be mimicking their dam, and I think it falls in with humans as well. If you think about it, you probably don't know a lot of super good people that didn't have a good mother, and so I would think your dam is at least 60%, maybe even 70%, but I would give her more than 50% of the credit.
Well, I'm going to make sure my mother hears this program, and so she'll appreciate the fact that you said
we
what you
just passed
said.
Mother's Day too, so that's good.
We did, and gratefully, my mother just turned 85 just before Mother's Day, so we're just grateful to have her with us. If I'm getting ready to go to a stallion to breed, and if I want to come to New Horizon, what do I need to do and what do I need to have done to the mare before I show up?
Well, the main requirements that I have on a mare coming to me, they need to come with a current negative coggins. I don't personally have to have a health certificate at my facility, but if they're traveling across state lines, they will need to get a health certificate filled out by a veterinarian as well. And I do require that they be current on vaccinations and deworming because, you know, for several reasons, I'm caring for a lot of people's animals, and so I don't want anything coming in there that is not protected on their own behalf, and I don't want them coming in poor health and causing a problem with the other client's horses either. So those are very important to me. The other side of that is the breeding soundness, and that really pretty well depends on the client. Some like to have some of that evaluation and work done ahead of time, and some may not have access to a good reproductive vet in their area and may rather just bring her to us, knowing they might have a little longer stay if we're going to be starting that process at the barn. So that would be my requirements and my recommendations.
Okay. Dr. Bennett, following up on that, what type of vaccinations should we have for our brood mares and our babies? And, you know, we talked a little bit before the program started about some outbreaks that we have right now for West Nile and rabies that are going on. So what type of vaccination and program should the mare be on before she goes to the breeding barn?
Yeah, let me just follow up with what Mike said. You know, the Coggins is very important, the EIA test. That's a state law. So if you get out on a public highway or you're going to public facilities such as New Horizon Stables, the state law, we have to have a negative Coggins on file there for that horse. Now, if you've got a mare with a baby on her side, if that baby's 4 months of age or less, he does not need a Coggins. So you don't have to have a Coggins on the baby. If he's with his mother. Getting over to the vaccination side, we definitely like to protect all the horses that are at the stable. And so we can custom make and do whatever Mr. Hicks wants to do. But basically the rabies, the West Nile encephalitis, and the tetanus influenza, are the ones that we recommend. And those are kind of the core, what we call core vaccines, which means that those vaccines are recommended, and there is a vaccine out there that's very efficacious against that disease. And like we talked before the show, you know, we're kind of in a hotbed in Middle Tennessee with rabies, and at most of the breeding farms there are mares that are turned out in pastures and exposed to wildlife. And then, of course, the West Nile, from the mosquito transfer, from the water and those sorts of transmissions. So we like to have at least the core vaccinations. Some stables I work with want to use strangles. I'm not a big proponent of that, but we do it if that particular breeding facility wants it. And then on the same side of that, the stallions are on a very strict vaccination program and a very routine worming program of fecal counts and monitored for their health, because nothing like having a breeding farm and having sick stallions. So the vaccinations are also important for the stallions as well.
Okay. When is the best time to start the vaccinations? I know with West Nile, is there a series that you go through on that? And I guess, you know, if you haven't started it, it's a good time to start, but when should you start those programs?
Yeah, you usually like to get vaccinated prior to being exposed, if possible. And in case of West Nile, in this area, March, April is rainy, wet season, mosquitoes starting to come out. So if you could get vaccinated late February, sometime in March, you're okay. The horses that have not received any vaccinations, such as weanlings, yearlings, something like that, there is a series that they need. But once they have that series, then all the vaccines pretty much are annual after that.
Okay. You mentioned a minute ago that that foals that were under 4 months or 4 months and under didn't require Coggins. Let me ask this. When you have a mare that's had a foal, when should you rebreed her? I know there are foal heats and then a normal heat cycle. Is there a better cycle to be breeding?
Well, it kind of depends on the individual preference. You know, we're getting kind of later into the breeding season right now. So if you've got a mare that's foaling in the next week or two, I would strongly recommend considering foal heat breeding, because it's going to back you back up just a little bit. If you've got mares that are foaling Middle Tennessee in last of January, you could probably go to the 30-day heat and keep them at that time period. But a lot of times management plays into that. If you're foaling them at home and the birth process goes good and there's no problems first couple of days after foaling and all that, foal heat's good. Some mares will cycle it 6, 7, 8 days after foaling, and I think that really diminishes the chances of getting those mares pregnant. The mares are going out there 10, 11, 12 days before we have to breed them on foal heat, our chances are pretty good. So you can kind of use it as a management thing. You can breed back on foal heat and back your next foal up a little bit, or you can wait 30 days and keep her at about the same time, or you can kind of split the difference and give them some prostaglandins at about 18 days and kind of not have the foal heat, but not have to wait for 30 days either. So there are things that you can do to fit each broodmare owner's preference.
Okay. Well, I'm getting old. I had a question, and then it just slipped my mind.
Foal heat is usually pretty good for us if the mare is cleaned up good after foaling, producing milk, gets up, moves around. But if you get a mare that's colics after foaling or has a long retention of the placental membranes after foaling, has discharge after foaling for a few days, those mares we'll recommend skipping foal heat and maybe short cycling them, so to speak, at 18, 19 days. But during that time period, we're doing some work on them. We're flushing the uterus, monitoring, make sure they are clean, ready to breed back.
Okay. Well, and that ties right into the question that I was trying to remember before I forgot, and that is that I love the sire summary that the Breeders Association puts out every year. And it also lists the stallions, the number of mares that have been reported on the breeding report, and then the number of foals that have been registered to that stallion for the following year. And it looks like the percentage of foals registered to mares bred is fairly low overall, probably in the 50% or less range. And some of that may have to do with people just not getting their foals registered, but some of it I would think has to do with problems with the mare getting in foal. What can we do to help increase the conception rates and the birth rates for these colts?
If you're asking me, I think a couple things go into that report. One is a lot of people are not registering their foals until they kind of get a little older and see how they're going to do and those sorts of things figure in. But to answer your question, to have the mare ready to breed back, you know, nutrition is such a critical part of that equation. It's like about any other business. You just can't starve a profit out of things. So you got to take care of them, and proper nutrition definitely plays a role. And so if you got a mare that foals and her nutrition level is low, you're just going to have a tougher time getting her bred back, because she is going to try to produce milk to feed her offspring, and then she's going to try to maintain her body weight secondly, and then the last thing she's going to try to do is put on weight and reproduce. So when you look at it from that standpoint, her criteria is maintain her baby that she's got, that she's nursing, maintain her own health, and then try to put on weight and reproduce is the last thing. So if you keep the nutrition plane up, know what you're feeding, the quality you're feeding, and watch each individual mare accordingly, your chances are going to be greatly improved.
Okay. And let me just remind our listeners today that we're talking with Dr. John Bennett with Equine Services, LLC, and also with Mr. Mike Hicks, who is the owner and manager of New Horizon Stables, a premier breeding facility here in Middle Tennessee, and also is a vice president with the Walking Horse Breeders Association as well. And I will remind you that we'll take calls. The phone number, if you'd like to call and ask questions, is 213-943-3396. 213-943-3396. And last week, with our first show, we didn't take any calls, and we had a ton of people that were calling wanting to ask questions, and today nobody's on the line. So you can never tell how that's going to go. Mike, let me ask you a question. As people are starting to become involved in more disciplines with their horses, do they need to maybe reevaluate the type of foal that they're trying to breed for?
That's a great question, Gary. The you know, when I'm talking to a mare owner and we're talking about stud selection, that is usually my first question. Even before we really get into pedigree, my first question would be, what are your intentions for this foal? You know, what area are you trying to go to? Because we have such a versatile horse, and they can go in so many different areas that does have to be a major part of your breeding decision. And I think we're seeing that as a whole more and more. You know, the show horse has been and still is the cornerstone of the breeding operations. You know, that is the dream, is to raise a baby that can go on to be a successful show horse. And whether it is so they can market that individual to sell to someone who wants to have a show horse, or whether it is because they want to enjoy it as a show horse themselves, that has been the cornerstone of it. And a lot of times our recreational horses, our versatility horses, our all of these other divisions that you see coming up, you know, it's the walking horses are growing in a lot of arenas as far as mounted shooting competitions, as far as extreme cowboy races, you know, just dressage, just endless possibilities where we can go with this breed of horse. But a lot of those horses have in the past been more of a byproduct of breeding geared toward toward the show ring. And I think we're seeing a turn more and more of, as we see these horses become more involved in the other disciplines, we're seeing that open new avenues for breeding on different horses, different bloodlines, different, you know, different abilities in different arenas. So I think that is something that is constantly changing, and I know that I'm trying to change with it, and I know most other people managing stallions and marketing stallions, marketing offspring, they're trying to do the same thing.
Well, it seems that there's been a big trend. And, of course, again, we have listeners that are all across the United States and in our foreign countries. So throughout the Southeast, I guess it's been more of a prevalent thing to be breeding for the show ring. But it seems that as people are getting involved in these other disciplines, they're actually breeding for the type of trail horse that they want. Or we've got a guest coming on later in June that's very active in endurance competition with the AERC, and they're breeding for endurance horses. They're competing very well with their Tennessee walking horses on against the Arabians, who've kind of dominated that sport for a long time. But next week we've got Tracy Pinson coming on, and she's going to be talking with us about the event coming up on the Celebration Grounds next week. But people are getting involved in so many different disciplines today that it would seem that more people are breeding more for the discipline that interests them. And, you know, it's been reflected, I guess, a little bit because we have a lot of color at our breeding barns today, don't we?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Our color side has upgraded so much too, in the quality and abilities and trainability stages, that it has really come into its own a lot more, and you know, especially for those that are really breeding toward a trail horse, a lot of them are, you know, pretty, and color is very important. But they don't only want a pretty horse, and they don't only want the correct color. They want one that does have the disposition they're looking for, and they want one that does have the gait they're looking for. And so it is it's a complicated process on finding that right stallion and that right mare to produce whatever arena you're headed toward.
Dr. Bennett, I was just thinking, as Mike and I were talking about that, is that in your practice, and it's an equine practice, are your clients equally divided between disciplines as far as the clients that you have coming in, more show horses, more trail horses, or how is that mixed?
Yeah, we kind of see a little bit of everything walk through the door. We got one client, Scott McGregor, up in Murfreesboro, that's doing some dressage with his Tennessee Walkers and doing extremely well, putting on clinics with them, traveling around the country, getting this huge response with that. The trail riding population, they want to take care of those horses, just like the person that's getting ready to go next week and win a blue ribbon at the show. So we get it across the board. And like Mike says, everybody that's got one wants it to be the best it can possibly be, and that's what we're after. No matter if they come here as a veterinary clinic or they go to his place as a breeding facility, they're after the best they can get.
Right, and regardless of the discipline, we want the best care, the best quality care that we can have for our horses, and the well-being of the horse. Whether it's our backyard pet or our trail buddy or a show horse or a competition horse, is just as important to everyone. Yes. Is there anything
One thing I have seen increase, I guess, since in the last few years is the owner amateur riders. You know, they really enjoy getting out there and riding their own horses, whether they've trained them or they've had them professionally trained. But at least they get to show them, and that part of this show industry seems to really be picking up, in my eyes anyway.
Well, it seems like that's some of the largest classes that we have, a lot of these shows.
Yeah,
and a lot of shows are just strictly for flat shot horses today. So I know there's several events that are coming up pretty soon that are just flat shot horses, and most of those, I would assume, are amateur-owned and trained horses that are participating in those classes as well. Any final advice that you'd like to give our listeners, Dr. Bennett, as far as how they need to be taking care of their horses, what they need to be looking for as far as illness, diseases that may be hitting us this time of year?
No, I think in combination with making sure your horse is fed good and vaccinated good and worm good, you know, make sure his teeth are done on a regular basis, especially as the broodmare progresses in age. Teeth get to be a major part of that. That would be one thing I would recommend. And then the other thing, going back to the nutrition stage, we see a lot of people that will spend a lot of money at Mike's barn, spend a lot of money with the veterinarians to get the mares in foal, and then when that baby's born, they kick them out in the back pasture, and they don't really do much with them until they're about a year or two old. And I don't think that's fair. You know, you got to keep that ball rolling, keep the nutritional plane up, keep your vaccinations current, keep your teeth checked. And there's lots and lots of very competent veterinarians, not only here in Middle Tennessee, but throughout your listening area that can advise these owners and custom make a program that suits the farm that your horse is at, whether it's at home or at a stable or whatever. But the horse industry and the horse population is such a mobile group now that vaccinations and health, nutrition, dental work is very critical.
Well, regardless of whether you're going out on the trail to ride somewhere or whether you're going to a show somewhere, it's important to have those vaccinations done and have the proper paperwork with you as well. So
that's correct.
I know that people, if they'd like to reach you, can do that by calling 931-437-2463. 931-437-2463. And you also have a Facebook page that has some really pretty ladies on there. And that's Equine Services LLC. It's a shame we couldn't put their picture up for this broadcast.
That's right.
Do you have a website that they go to?
We do not at this time. We've been working on one, but basically Facebook and the phone method, I guess. I'm trying to get updated. I don't want to give my age away. I'm not hardly as bad as Armed and Dangerous, but I'm getting up there, so...
Oh, gosh. Well, I'm afraid we're all getting along in the tooth a little bit, but but you guys are pretty young fellas. So, listen, Dr. Bennett, I appreciate you being with us on the program today very much. I know you had to clear some things out to be able to stay
no
with
problem.
Us. And, Mike, I'd like you to hold for just a little bit with us. But, Dr. Bennett, again, I appreciate very much you taking the time to be on the program today. And those folks that had questions, I guess, just decided not to call in. But maybe they can reach you directly with anything.
They sure can. Yes, sir. Anytime. Right. Thank you very much, Gary.
Well, thanks a lot, Dr. Bennett. Appreciate it.
Uh-huh. Bye-bye.
Mike?
Yes, sir.
All right. I've got a few questions for you here.
Okay.
You know, we talked a little bit earlier about what the TWH Friends Helping Friends Facebook page is doing for folks, but also as a member of the executive committee with the Breeders Association, TWEBA has a program as well that's called MICA Care. And
that's correct.
Could you tell us a little bit about that? Because again, this is a horse family, and so we try to take care of folks, and it's more about caring for each other and putting it aside some of our differences. So share with us a little bit about the MICA Care program.
I'll be happy to do that. It's a very touching story. There was a young boy in Colorado that was having some major issues in his health and loved the Tennessee Walking Horse. And the president of the TWHBEA at the time was Marty Irby, and he happened to be vacationing in Colorado and decided he was going to take a day and go and actually meet Micah and spend a little time with him and give him a book on the Tennessee Walking Horses and just visit with him and just let him know that the Tennessee Walking Horse family cared for him, wished him well, and wanted to take time out of their business schedule to spend a few minutes with him. And this young boy just really touched Mr. Irby's heart, and he shared this with us as the executive committee, and you know, it just falls into exactly what Ms. Archer was talking about. The horse communities in general, I haven't been involved with any of the other breeds to the extent I have the Tennessee Walking Horse. I'm sure they're much the same. But I do know for a fact, firsthand, that the Tennessee Walking Horse industry is very much a family. And much like any family, We don't always see eye to eye, and we don't always agree on every topic, but we do care for one another. And we, you know, it's kind of like you could talk about your sister, Gary, but I better not. You know, it's
right.
One of those kind of things. And so it is a lot like family, and we do like to care for one another. And this story of Micah Bailey, he has since passed away, and lost his battle with his health. But I do know that the experience of Mr. Irby visiting him really touched him, and that led us into an endeavor with the help of some of our membership and some of our board members to initiate a program that we tagged Micah Care as the name. And it's just a care for those inside the industry opportunity. And you can make a tax-free donation through the Tennessee Walking Horse Foundation. All of that information can be gotten to you through the Tennessee Walking Horse Breeders and Exhibitors Association. And then that is placed into a fund for the purpose of just being able to show those who are in a rough spot in their life due to health or that such thing, that somebody cares. And it's not really designed, at least at this point, it's still early stages, not really designed at this point for financial help, but just for caring help, just to be able to send some flowers or do something little, just to let them know somebody's thinking about them and somebody's caring. And so it's one of the most positive things that we have done in the time I've been associated with the board and executive committee, and I'm really proud to be a part of it.
Well, I think it's a great program, and hopefully as we go forward, we'll be able to do some things to help generate some funds to finance more programs that could be done through the Micah Care program. I know that people can go to twhbea.com and check on programs, and it will list the Micah Care program in there, and you can look at that and see more of the details, but sometimes it's just the small things that people really need help with, and I know if a person needs groceries, there's going to be some money to help take care of groceries and some other expenses that might be incurred. And again, as this program develops and grows, I hope that we'll be able to do more things through the Breeders Association with that. So thanks for sharing that with us, Mike.
You're very welcome.
Couple of other things, and I guess we're getting into the last 6 or 7 minutes, so a few things that I've been asked to talk about. One of the things, Mike, and again, I'm going to ask you to talk about this with us a little bit, and that is the Breeders Incentive Program, and your committee was responsible for presenting this, and it ends on July 1st, so July 1st gets here pretty quickly. Tell us a little bit about the incentive program that we have for folks with full registration and with late registrations.
Well, it's actually two separate programs, and the first program that we started discussing in the committee was a program to get some of those horses back in the system that had not been registered, not been transferred in a timely fashion, that type of thing. You were speaking earlier about the statistics in the sire summary and the low percentage of foals registered. And a lot of times that is because people procrastinate. They procrastinate on getting a foal registered timely, and then the longer you wait, the older that foal is, there's a fee schedule that eases up, and so then it gets into a more expensive process, and then they procrastinate even more. So we wanted to try to bring those horses back in, bring that pride of ownership to those folks, and you know, and stimulate revenues for the association at the same time through memberships and such as that. So we enlisted a program that will go through July 1st that on any horse that is a late registration or a late transfer, assuming all paperwork is in order, that will be done without any late fees being added on. So a transfer would be done at the same cost if it was done within the first 30 days of transfer ownership, and a full registration would be done at the same cost it would be within the first 6 months in those lowest cost ranges. The other side to that was, if you're going to reward the people who have procrastinated, you need to do something for the people who are doing business on time. And so we also enlisted a program. There's basically a multiple transaction discount. This also will apply to in-order paperwork placed in by July 1st, but your first paid transaction will be at full price, and then there's a sliding scale of discounts that will come down from that second at 10% off, third at 20% off, and fourth and all subsequent at 30% off. So it can be a pretty significant savings for people to go ahead and that are doing timely business to get that done, save themselves a little money, and not only be rewarding the procrastinators, but be rewarding those who are doing their business in a timely manner.
Well, that's a great program that the Breeders Association has put in place. And I know we talk about procrastinating, but we've been through some pretty tough financial times over the last several years. And a lot of folks that would like to have registered their babies didn't do that, and a lot of folks didn't get transfers done. And then we've had situations, too, where people have purchased a horse that was sold on an application, and so it wasn't their procrastination but somebody else's. And this enables them to go ahead and have those horses registered at the regular fee without the late penalties. So we want to mention that because it's really important to have a registered horse. If you want to show your horse needs to be registered, there's a certain amount of pride of ownership in having a horse that's registered. And in order to participate in so many of the programs that the Breeders Association has available, you need to have a registered horse to do that as well. So on behalf of the membership, let me thank the association and the Breeders Committee for having put this program together. And again, we don't want people to miss out on that because there is a time limit. Everything needs to be in by July 1st to the association to have process to take advantage of really tremendous savings on that. So thanks for sharing that information.
You're very welcome.
Well, I'm starting to run out of time, Mike, and I've got a couple of things I need to hit real quickly. Next week, our guest is Tracy Pinson. The Extreme Cowboy Association is going to have their national championship at the Celebration Grounds on May the 24th and 25th, starting at 10 o'clock. Starting today in Germany, we have the German Championships in Wingding, Germany. And we want to encourage our foreign listeners to visit that if they can. It's at the Bader-Kieser Arena in Wingding, Bavaria, Germany. We also have the Pewat Jamboree that has their first show June the 1st at the Bedford Ag Center, and they're going to have 48 classes, so that's June 1st for that. And want to encourage you to check out the Tennessee Walking Horse Breeders and Exhibitors Association Facebook page, because there's an exciting contest that's getting started on there for kids and their horses. So be sure and check with that. And we appreciate everyone listening today. We hope you found the program enlightening and enjoyable. Tune in next week on Thursday at 12 o'clock Central Standard Time for Equestrian Legacy Radio. Thanks very much.